Welcome to the Behind the Curtain podcast, your real world guide to real estate investment and property management.
In today's episode, we're going to talk about the current sales market, some of the things we're seeing with sales prices and listings, and we'll talk a little bit about where we expect rental prices to go. For everything you're about to hear in today's episode, we're recording on March the 21st, 2024.
Behind the Curtain Real Estate Podcast is sponsored by Memphis Real Estate Advisors. Memphis Real Estate Advisors is a realtor team led by husband and wife duo, Aaron and Alyssa Ivy. Bringing over 20 years of experience in both residential and commercial real estate sales and property management, the team works with investors, buyers, and sellers as a member branch office of the national franchise, EXP Realty. To get in contact with Memphis Real Estate Advisors, visit them online at memphisreadvisors.com or call 901-671-1015.
So, Richard, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is the constriction that we have in the local market right now. You know, we are seeing something here in Memphis that I believe is a similar trend in cities all across America that are middle income cities. Memphis is a middle income city with a sizable but not overwhelming lower income population. I would say since 2010 or 2011, if listeners have listened to multiple episodes, they'll hear me quote that year several times. 10 or 11 is when the real estate market found the floor post crash. Okay. And we began to recover. So here it is, 2024, and we are 13 years, 12 years in. We're still in this boom. We're still near the top. Prices are still near the top. They're softening, but they're really not making major changes. They're not coming down. And so we're, in my opinion, this line curve is still at the top crest. And so we're not in a new market yet. We're still in this old boom market. And we have a bit of a hangover, if you will, because of that boom market. So having said that, if you go to Zillow, if you go to Redfin, and you just zoom out and you look at a map of our county, Shelby County, and you look at the number of houses for sale, you are going to see a lot of properties for sale in a city that is not experiencing a housing shortage. Okay. National news, especially if it involves politics, they're going to be talking about a housing shortage. Well, listener, listen up. If you want to come to a place where there is no housing shortage, you should come to Memphis. Quite the opposite. One of the things that we're seeing as we come to the end of the first quarter of 2024 is a lot of properties for sale. And there are a lot of properties for sale which are overpriced. They're overvalued by the seller. And the market is responding by saying, we're not going to buy this property until it comes down in price. So we're in kind of an interesting situation there. If investors are listening and they're thinking about how can I get into Memphis, Tennessee, which is a city or a market where for decades, Memphis has been listed as a phenomenal place to get your feet wet, you know, to get started in real estate. I would really have to encourage investors to look at the value add properties that are out there. There aren't many. They're difficult to find, but there are a lot of properties out there that are not yet flipped. They haven't had somebody come in and refresh them, rehab them, and restore them to a usable state. And that's really where the future of real estate investment is in the city of Memphis. I think those gems are out there. They can be found, but they do take work. And in a previous episode, we were talking to Devin Peterson, who's a lender and does a lot of lending with the DSCR type loan, which it's a loan that's based on the potential cash flowing of the property that's being purchased, not necessarily the credit and the documentation of the borrower. And Devin makes it very, very easy to work with a value add property because he's able to see the potential cash flow. And he's also able to provide a construction loan or a bridge loan that gets the buyer from acquisition, fund the rehab process to get it out on the market and begin cash flowing. And Devin talked about one of his borrowers that he's got a great relationship with out of Florida. And this borrower just sends him an address and says, this is what I'd like. Devin runs the numbers. I've gotten this from Devin, sends him back a pricing spreadsheet and says, this is what I can offer right now. Do you want it? And that man, of course, says yes, because he trusts Devin. And then he's immediately off to the races. And Devin said that within 60 days, this borrower is cash flowing on an occupied property. That is amazing. And that type of scenario really is what I want to encourage our new investors to consider as they're asking themselves the question, how do I get into a market that is largely overvalued? Where do I find these gems? How can I get going? And so what I would encourage the investor to do is not only give us a call, but give Devin a call. Let's talk about the basics and get our feet under us and get a good vision for where we can go and pull the trigger. My cell, for any of the listeners that want to call, is 901-461-0905. And you can call me 7 days a week. I may not answer if I'm with my family, but I'll receive your voicemail, give you a call back. If you're calling during the week, chances are I'm going to pick up the phone.
They can shoot you a text at that number as well, can't
they?
Send
me a text as well at 901-461-0905.
As you were talking there, I was remembering the conversation that we had at some point in February, where we were talking about just the number of houses that were coming on the market, their prices, and I'd noticed an increase in the number of rental properties that were coming back on the neighborhood where I live. One of the things that it brought to my attention was we've got all these houses that are listed that aren't selling with overinflated prices. That's part of why they're not selling. But characteristically with houses for sale, after the event, we can go and see what it actually sold for. But in the rental market, we don't get that luxury. So would you agree that over the last, 3-4 years, we've seen an increased bubble of rental prices as a result of that factor? People are able to list their property at a ridiculous rent rate that isn't true market value, but that artificially inflates the marketplace. And of course, we don't get to see what it ultimately rented for. So if it was listed for $2,000 and it rented for $1,750, we wouldn't know that.
I would say that we don't know exactly what that property rented for, but I'm going to give you a secret. Would you like to know my secret of how I know what the property rented for?
Is it legal?
Completely.
Good.
It's not only legal, it's public information.
Well, let's go for it.
All right. So within, I would say, 6 clicks of a mouse, you can find out what any subject property has rented for. And by the way, we are not sponsored by Zillow, but you can go to Zillow. This is a great secret. If you're hearing my words right now, please do this as soon as you get the chance, and you'll be thrilled at this new trick, the information you're going to be able to get without even talking to me. All right. You don't have to talk to a professional to get this information. So we're going to go to Zillow. We're going to go to the search bar at the upper left-hand corner, and we're going to type in the address of the property that you're curious about. It's going to pull up that property. You're going to go to the upper right-hand corner or thereabouts, and you're going to see those three dots. When we write, we call it an ellipsis. Richard, I don't know from a website URL standpoint what we call those three dots. It's basically just that's where you click if you want more information, or like a drill down menu. Zillow just gives you two options with that drill down menu. The one that I want you to click is called View Owner Dashboard. Okay, View Owner Dashboard. You're going to click that. It's going to take you to what I call a mirror. It's kind of like a two-way mirror, right? So you're going to look at the other side of the mirror. When you look at a property on Zillow, what you're seeing is the consumer side. All you have to do to know what the owner sees is to click those three dots on that subject property, View Owner Dashboard, click that, scroll down, and you're going to see several tables that you can click through to get great information. One of them is the line graph tracker, which tracks 1, 5, and 10 years of that property's value performance. Of course, this is projected value performance by Zillow, but their algorithm is really, really good. It's gotten very good, guys. And you click that, you toggle it to rental Zestimate. I know that sounds silly, but that's still what it's called. Toggle to rentals estimate, and then you get a 1, 5, and 10 year model of what the rental value is. What you can do is go and find out the last listed price And I'm telling you that in all of my experience, 23 years of experience, what I find is the last listed price basically gives you the least price, the, you know, what the property leased for, what it rented for, within 5% of that number. So it allows us to draw a conclusion with a margin of error of 5% in either direction of the last listed price as to what that property rented for. So if you're curious about what the market is doing in your particular neighborhood, Richard, you'd said that around, you know, where you live, you've seen other, you know, some rental houses come up. Richard owns his home, but, you know, there are rental houses all across America now. And so if you want to know what the houses in your community are renting for, find that address, go to Zillow, log it in, find that owner dashboard and take a look. And you can pretty much be assured that you know what the property rented for. One of the things, though, that I wanted to bring up, and this may not be on topic necessarily, but we're not necessarily known for staying on topic.
Nah, get off topic. Come on.
Here we go. Off topic. How is it that your neighbor is able to rent that property for so much money? Right? Like, this is the question of the ages. How is it that a guy or a girl lists their information as the representative for a property for rent, and they are asking way too much money? How is it that they are making that money? I have the answer for you, but do you have any guesses?
Well, I mean, it's the question of home shortages. It's finding a home that's suitable for you. As we know, renters often rent houses that are far in excess of the space, the number of bedrooms they need. Hmm. So they're paying $1,900 a month for a 3-bedroom house when they could be paying, you know, $1,450 for something smaller because it's all they need. But again, it's about availability. What is available at that particular time? So it's supply and demand.
Richard, it's funny. Listener, if you can't already tell by Richard's accent, he is not American born, but Richard and I both love cars. Okay. We love cars. Richard has really opened my, you know, view into the European car market and how that's worked over the years and how in Europe they were able to make performance work with a smaller motor. Right. Or a smaller car. And Richard has in the past, he and I have laughed at the huge American cars and SUVs that are out there. And he'll say, what in the world are you driving an Escalade for? You only drive yourself, right? Like you're not driving 7 other passengers. You're just driving yourself. Why do you need a car that's so big? And that's a very British outlook on automotive use, right? So Americans, we have this bad habit of saying, well, I'm going to buy more than what I need. Richard totally just touched on that. As Americans, we overbuy, we overrent, we pay too much money for the image that we don't need to have. And so that's a really excellent point. Here's just my counterpoint to what you just said. I believe that your neighbor is able to rent his home for an egregious amount of money because he doesn't qualify the applicant. They will take the first person that comes along with enough money. They probably will not pull their credit. They may do a background check or a background report or a criminal background report. They're probably going to ask for some paycheck stubs and some contact information. And then they're going to ask for a very large deposit. So what we've done in the last 7 years or so is we've given our neighbors, right, normal people, the opportunity to lease or sell their own property at a very high amount. The problem is they are not professional in the way that they go about it. So this overinflated rental market is being supported by people who are not performing their due diligence to lease to these people. The real question, and this is the real curiosity for me, is what happens with those houses when you have an unqualified landlord who has very little education on what they're doing and this tenant stops paying? Can you imagine how many attorneys get a phone call, you know, from these novice landlords, there's no criticism for that. Everybody's got to get a start. But these novice landlords are calling and they're saying, he's been in there for 4 months and he stopped paying and he won't return my phone calls. And I think he's, you know, hurting my home or damaging my home. What do I do? And then they have to get a legal education now about how to get that person out. Long story short, that beautiful big rent, monthly rent price that they were charging that person, all of a sudden it's lost its value because they're not able to continue to operate it, or the person that they put into the property really can't afford it.
One thing I'll bring to your attention is because I know someone on our street that this happened to, where they were paying a specific amount of rent. The rent had gone up every year that they'd lived there. I think they'd been there for about 7-8 years. But finally, the rent leapt up an extraordinary amount. And this was also a person that was renting more space than was truly needed. So they made a move to a smaller place to maintain the rent that they were currently paying. But that house then became available. So that in itself, people actually being priced out of where they're living, is creating some movement, which I think is a lot of what we're seeing that's coming on the market. We're seeing more and more rental properties where people are moving from houses into apartments because that's all they can afford.
Yeah, I know of somebody right now who is moving out of a home and into an RV. We've been watching the current young generation, which is Gen Z. We are watching, if you're on TikTok or if you're on Instagram or social media at all, you're hearing a lot of young people talk about affordability problems, which is sad. I mean, it's sad to me as a Gen Xer. I feel like I had a lot of opportunities that were afforded to me that are not afforded to my children. I have 3 children right now, and they're almost all out of the house. And so, you know, I wonder how it is that we're going to bridge this gap of affordability. And if you're not in the place where you've had young people around you that are becoming adults, right? And in front of your eyes, you know, right before your eyes, this story seems to be far, far away. But the reality is that Gen Z is the future of our economy. And if they cannot find affordable housing, good paying jobs, you know, the ability to be able to go live a life, then our economy is in trouble. As the oldest Gen Zers right now are around 27, okay, 27 years old, and they go all the way down to, you know, 13, 14, I think is the youngest Gen Z right now. That's our big buyer's market, right? Like, we're not doing enough to court this market. We're not doing enough to make, you know, housing affordable to this market, to this demographic. We've got some work to do in housing. If you would love to hear or like to hear my long-term projections on where rental rates are going, I'd love to tell you about that, because I think we're at a turning point right now. 2024 is a turning point for affordability. I don't know what's going to come out of the federal government. I can tell you that the federal government, because it's an election year, is bandying about a number of unconventional options for helping reestablish affordability. I think that the federal government during this election year, they know that this is the most important factor that's at play for votes, you know, is how am I going to be able to live my life? How am I going to be able to afford to have a family? How am I going to be able to afford to invest in my future, right? So that I can retire someday. Affordability is a huge, huge part of it. What I think is going to happen based on the scenario that you had mentioned before is I believe we're going to see turnover this year. We saw turnover last year where people moved out, and then the property was not able to be leased again for that same amount. Okay. So we're going to see a softening of rents for the average housing provider, whether it be an apartment complex or a single family housing. We're going to see those rents soften and come down. There's going to be more negotiability. But what I really see as happening is that there's going to be some weariness on the part of a lot of investors and landlords who are tired of vacancy. They're going to get tired of it, and they're going to say, you know what? I just want at least, how do I do that? And we're going to begin to see articles and advice out there and coaching, which talks about how to better budget for the properties that you've got, because we're in for the long haul at this point. You know, we've got to get this economy back on its feet, and it can't do it with the lack of affordability that's out there right now for the consumer.
Well, I mean, as far as the rental and real estate market, that's the perspective you're talking from. I would say the economy as a whole is doing rather well. I mean, the figures seem to show that.
That's true. But the sentiment, and you know, your kids are a little younger than mine. The sentiment that's out there is that there aren't as many opportunities as the millennials had, as Gen X had, and as the baby boomers had. So I'm concerned about public sentiment for that particular demographic. I really feel like they're who I need to rent to. right? So the young people that come into my office that are sitting at my lease signing table, they watch this video, you know, that we've produced, and they're signing this paperwork. As I walk back and forth in front of that room and I see the people that are in there, they are between the ages of 21 and 35 on average. Those are the young millennials and the older, mid to older Gen Z. My concerns about Memphis in particular are that the jobs need to compensate these young people enough to be able to afford the rents that are out there. But I do agree. I definitely do agree that the economy as a whole is doing great, unless you're in automotive, which is struggling, you know, new car automotive, or if you're in certain types of housing, such as, you know, purchasing move-in ready middle income properties. Those are very, very high, and there's a lot on the market right now.
Well, I think that hits on one of my thoughts. I think today there's so much opportunity. There's opportunities today that we never had when we were younger. You know, there's so much technology where you literally can start a business and be making a great income in a very short period of time today. So I think really it's a lot of people are just not self-starters. They don't have the volition to go out and do something. And perhaps they're a little bit lazy too. And they don't think, well, hold on a minute, let me diversify, let me switch gears, go over here, do something different, maybe do three or four things in different areas all at the same time, and across the board you make a great income. So there's plenty of opportunity out there. I just think a lot of people coming up that are young are not attaining the skills that we did at that age. And if we look at our own parents' generation, they attained skills that we didn't in our generation. So generation after generation, we're losing the ability to learn basic teach myself skills and self-starting skills.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the downsides of technology is that it makes what you and I grew up doing on a sheet of paper, you know, it makes it so easy to put it up on a screen. But, and this is my personal opinion about screens in general. Guys, right now, Richard and I are looking at each other. We're not looking at a screen. We're sitting in the same room. This is something that he and I are very, very familiar with, which is the face-to-face conversation. We grew up doing it. We were, you know, before cell phones, we're dating ourselves at this point, but that is a skill set that we are finding is not as common with young people. So I do believe that technology can make you have this feeling that you are established or that you are important or significant and that you should be hireable. But man, is it so important to be able to go to a boss or a supervisor or a future employer and have that confident face-to-face conversation. That means so much in this world. And we are missing out on that. Young people are needing a lot more coaching in that regard.
Yeah. So to switch back to the topic we were talking about, which was the sales that are available in the real estate market, let's talk about some of the listings that you have at the moment. You know, obviously you talk to your investors on a regular basis and they'll share with you that they're looking to sell. It might not actually be an active listing, but what are you seeing there?
I'm seeing some very interesting trends when it comes to sales. Probably the number one package that we are soft pedaling right now. And for anybody that would like to know more about this package, you can reach out to me at 901-461-0905. There's an investor that I've worked for 8 years. He has 24 properties and he's looking to liquidate them in the form of a package. The goal, of course, is for him to sell all of them within one transaction, right? So the downside of that is that the retail prices for all of his properties together would make this package a $5 million package. So that's a lot of money, and it's a lot more money than most people are ready to spend. So I'm talking to a number of different potential buyers, from individuals to small LLCs with multiple partners, all the way up to huge corporations, one of which, Richard, I haven't even told you about. This is kind of cool. A cryptocurrency company reached out to me recently, and they're a real estate backed cryptocurrency. That's where the integrity of their crypto coin comes from, is from real estate. And so they've reached out to me and they've said, hey, do you have any packages that, you know, we could possibly consider purchasing? So I went online and I said, you know, who are these people? I looked them up. I'm not going to mention them here. Long story short, they have a $3.5 billion backing right now. So that's their initial real estate footprint. And they want our $5 million package to be a part of that. What they tell me is that they're willing to pay above asking in order to obtain real estate, because their real product is the coin. It's not the real estate. The real estate, they know, they've already projected, is going to continue to inflate. It's going to go up in value, and it's going to serve them over the course of the 10-year holding period that they intend to hold it for. So they've already done that math. What they really want to sell is that cryptocurrency, right? But they've got to have a valuable asset to back that cryptocurrency. I tell all of this to you to convey that people are still in the market. There is still both a corporate interest in acquiring real estate, and there's an individual interest in acquiring real estate right now. So listener, do not for one second think that the shine has been lost on real estate investments. It is actually, it is as strong as ever. The problem that people are running into is the financing portion, right? It is, how do I project cash flow on an overvalued piece of property? So I know that we're talking about our listings, but I just want to come back one more time and remind the listener that value add is how to get into this industry. I would not recommend, if you're my buyer, that you buy a retail priced property. I think a retail priced property is a great way to put yourself in a negative cash flow situation to where you're always paying in to that property. And that's not going to help you in the short term, because cash flow is for the short term, right? And you can live on it, or you can reinvest it, you can save it, and you can say, I'm going to take that cash flow, build it up, and then have a down payment for my next home. The value add is how to get in there. I would encourage any listener, if they want to call me and talk about the properties that we have for sale, they can. You can absolutely do that. My wife, who's my selling partner, Alyssa Ivy, she's got about 10 properties right now that are listed in a retail fashion, right? Move in ready for the first time home buyer. And that's really where all these retail properties are going. So if you're going to buy it and move into it, chances are you're going to have to pay a retail price. But if you're an investor, don't be fooled by those retail prices that are out there. When you see a property that's priced at retail, talk to me about it. Let's look at the days on market. Let's look at how we can negotiate a lower price so that you can get into a really great home that's already been made move-in ready, but you don't want to have to pay those retail prices. And to tie this whole thing all up with a bow, we've been talking about the future of the real estate sales market and where it's going. My answer to the listener is it's going in the direction of softening prices. It's going into the direction of multiple offers, but in a different way. Like, it's going to be, what's the best offer that I can get that's below the list price, not above the list price. So the revolving door, we have come full circle now. We're back to this market where multiple people are going to be making offers, but nobody's going to offer list, you know, or they may offer list, but not above. So the seller has to think, well, which one is the best option now?
It's really going to flip from that seller's market that we did have to the buyer's market.
And I think it's going to stay there for several years.
How rapidly do you see that happening?
Let's talk about carrying costs, and we'll just sort of wrap up this episode, but the discussion of carrying costs. If you've ever had a property for sale, if you've ever owned a property, you've put it up for sale, and you've had to go ahead and move, right? You found your next house, or maybe you had to go to another city. So now you're leaving that vacant property behind. You're not living there, and you've already started in on taking care of your next property. Now you have what's known as vacant day carrying costs or vacancy costs. And that vacancy cost can be very expensive. We try to help our investors mitigate that cost by lowering the utility bills, you know, basically turning the house down to where it's barely consuming any energy, but you still have to pay your debt service or your mortgage or your loan payment. You still have to pay for insurance, and you are eventually going to have to pay a realtor if you're looking to sell that property. So those carrying costs, they're not cheap, but if the house were to sell within the first 90 days, they're reasonable. And you can, you know, you can do something with that carrying cost. You can write it down sometimes. You can write it off with your CPA's help. But 90 days is about what most people have to say, I can sell this property comfortably and not be uncomfortable with the carrying costs. what's going to change the market and the valuing of these properties and the list prices, what's going to lower the list price of the average house for sale is going to be the longer days on market. So we're going to see several things. We're going to see people making major drops in their list price. I'm talking about up to 5% drops, like maybe every 2 weeks until the properties are sold. Or you're going to see people that are going to take the property off the market and say, you know what, I'm going to paint a few rooms. I'm going to leave it off the market for 30 days. And then I'm going to put it back out on the market, and I'm going to put it back out on the market with a lower price. So there are several different strategies that sellers are going to use to get with the times, because the times aren't 2022. The times are 2024 and a contentious presidential election, lots of stuff, crazy stuff going on in the Senate right now politically. We're beginning to have our news feeds just full of this political chatter, and we're going to get tired of it. I'm already tired of it. So be looking for the opportunities. Buyers, if you want to do your own research, look at days on market. When you find a house that's over 90 days on market, that's where we need to start making offers that are below list. And that's where we need to start talking to our lender and saying, what would financing look like on these properties? What if I were to get it this $300,000 property for $245,000? Could I cash flow with that? Then you call your property manager and say, would this work? And what would it rent for? We need to be dreaming about how to better our own investment holdings and acquire great investments in this overpriced economy. And it can be done.
So give me an example of an investor property you have right now that a new investor may be interested in buying.
Sure. There are two buckets that I'll put my answers in. The first bucket would be in the case of this package that we're talking about. It's a 24 house package, and the houses range in this package from properties that are list price, if you will, and I put that in quotes, listed for $115,000. Those houses probably have a 0.95% ratio of monthly mortgage payment per the monthly rent, projected rent that they could, you know, receive by renting that property out. So they're still taking a little bit of a loss with that $115,000 property. There's a lot more room to grow there with that. And that $115,000 property is a retail list price. The cheaper the property is, the less flexibility that you have in the negotiating. Okay. For instance, I love cars. I've mentioned this before in previous episodes. If I want to go buy a Honda Civic, which is one of the most popular cars that you can buy anywhere in the world, and I go in there and I try to negotiate 5-7% off of the list MSRP, they're going to say no, because there's no margin in that inexpensive car. Right? They're going to say it's really worth what the list price is. Well, it's the same thing in housing. A cheaper house is probably going to sell for what it's listed for, or very, very close to it. So that would be one scenario of a property that we have for sale. These properties that we have for sale that we are listing, we've had in our management for between 10 and 20 years. So we know everything there is to know about the properties, and we love to maintain our properties. So these properties are also well maintained. The flip side of that on a retail listing would be, in this same package, we have several houses that are over $250,000. They're going to cash flow at a much slower rate, a smaller rate. They may even have a slight negative cash flow. When you do the numbers and you say, well, what would my cash flow be if I were to buy it at list price? Well, I would tell the listener, I don't think it's in your best interest, if you're an investor, to buy a retail priced property at list price. So instead, what we want to do is we want to take a look at that. We want to take a look at what the property was valued at in 2022, in 2021. We want to do a historical view, and we want to see what the pre-COVID inflation numbers were. And that's really what we want to try to offer for that property. And again, with a realtor's help, or with my help, I'll be able to help you pinpoint what that number is. And then we'll make some calls. Right now, I'm doing a lot of texting with other realtors. We're not putting in official offers. We're just saying, I've got a buyer for your address. The offer right now is this. And then that realtor who's representing that property will go talk to the seller and come back and say, I think that's too far away, but we could consider this. Or, you know, if you would like to offer, make an offer and have some of the fees included in that, like a lower than list offer, but you'll pay for other fees or extra fees to close the property. Those are other opportunities to buyers who are trying to negotiate on a retail listed property. Thank you so much for listening to our episode today about what the current real estate sales market is like and how to take advantage of really great opportunities, how to look for them, how to vet them, and how to finance those opportunities moving forward. There's so many opportunities that are out there, and we would love for you to give us a call and talk to us about your ideas and your dreams for owning investment real estate. You can reach me on my cell by a phone call or a text to 901-461-0905. You can text me anytime. I'd love to schedule a time to talk to you about what it is that you would like to do and how we can help you meet those goals.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Curtain Podcast, your real world guide to real estate investment and property management. Be sure to subscribe at behindthecurtainpodcast.com. And if you'd like to learn more about Enterprise Property Management's real estate services, please visit us on the web at epmrealestate.com. This has been a Sound Ideas Group production for Enterprise Property Management, Inc.